I think you all can hear me, so I'm not going to really worry about the mic. Yes? Okay. So my fellow panelists, you all have kind of taken all of the things that I wanted to talk about, spectrum of prevention, community, I think victim rights and a victim-centered approach. And I think for us, you know, we're very honored to be here and to talk to you all because Men Can Stop Rape, we see our work as a public health issue. We see our approach in primary prevention as the way in which we prepare men to hear the messages of the importance of being involved in preventing sexual assault and all forms of gender-based violence. And we couldn't speak, you know, to the great honor it is and to work with the SAPRO office and Suzanne's team selfishly. I see my colleague in the room, David Lee from Calcasa. Selfishly, being able to say that we work with the Department of Defense as we engage men across the country around this issue gives us credibility that is so unbelievably valuable to speaking in civilian communities about the importance of this work for men and for men to be involved. And so some of my conversation today will show you our approach in primary prevention, but I think it's really valuable in terms of talking about community. Katie, when you talked about they're our neighbors. You know, these are the men and women who, I'm from here. My neighbors work at Walter Reed. They work at Navy Medical. They are, you know, deployed. We have young men who are currently deployed that we've worked with. So to be able to see these men and women and the difficult job that they do, and to see the importance and the leadership of my fellow panelists and the Department of Defense, it's just tremendous. And I know there's a lot of moments where people want to take shots at the military for really difficult, hard jobs. It's not how we view it. We recognize that if you look at many of the social justice issues that have happened in this country, the military has been one of the key leaders, whether it be racism, gender issues. The military has, because of their structure, been able to take a real substantive leadership role and to continue to do it around this issue. And what Men Can Stop Rape is honored to do is to contribute in our small way to really the infrastructure that was already there. And as Suzanne said, has been a part of their work for a very long, long time. So I just need to click, is that right, Sarah?
Yeah, on the left one.
On the left one. So, you know, the stereotypical understanding of sexual assault prevention, you know, we know it's kind of a cycle of violence, and I'm telling you all as mental health or as public health officials, I'm sure you all have seen these kind of risk reduction models that exist. And for us, we know that that's really important. You know, as a father of two daughters and now a son, we know it's important around safety and the importance of that. But we don't feel like that is the way that we best approach the work in terms of engaging men. Right, most guys are not really going to be concerned about, you know, going to 7-Eleven at 2 in the morning if they want to do that. Right, military men particularly may not have, you know, they may have an even higher sense of their own confidence. That's not the way we're going to engage the men that we believe we work with. A new understanding of sexual assault prevention, and Jane was talking a little bit of this in terms of bystander intervention. Right, you all know as a field this is not new. But what we believe we're able to do now is to provide script and language and start to practice some of the muscle memory that as men we don't get around gender-based violence issues. Right? This is a new campaign, our Where Do You Stand campaign that's focused on college campuses. And as you see, you know, it's average college students in settings that young people are in, bars, the research that we've done around bars and tailgates and in the quads, and giving young men active, everyday kinds of language to create a culture that was said earlier, culture that refuses to accept any form of sexual assault, domestic violence, any form of gender-based violence from occurring. And this is in civilian life, but it is to us a new understanding of getting men involved. That the stereotypical versions of this work used to be risk reduction for women. We've been really focused on for many, many years as California Coalition, and colleague David again, how do we engage men? How do we engage young men? How do we engage communities to see this as an issue not just for women to reduce their risk from going out late at night? So, you know, a limited use of social marketing, you know, was kind of traditional radio ads and TV ads and print ads, and we do those. We love them. We think that they're great in terms of raising awareness. We think they're really valuable for people to think and consider and ponder in their own without having to expose their personal opinions. We think that those are really important, and we want to continue to use those as a beginning of educating people around these issues. To tell you all about social marketing seems a little silly, but I mean social marketing that involves much more than television and advertising campaigns, effective programs, a combination, right? We have a term in our organization called sustained saturation, right? And the spectrum prevention speaks to that. You'll see it's about really having multiple interventions going on at the same time. I love when Suzanne shows, you know, the campaign that we helped create for them, and then the Safe Helpline with RAIN. You know, meeting people wherever they are, providing a service and a resource wherever they are, is what we think social marketing is about. It is not just the poster and the billboard. It is the trainings. It is about community involvement and engagement, and finding as many ways for people. I think it was great when you highlight how many unreported people who may have been assaulted prior to even joining the military see this resource and know now that they can access it. And that's a testament to the leadership of SAPRO and the Department of Defense. And we think that is what the best of social marketing is to do. Provide people avenues for intervention, avenues for resources, not just to be, hey, something on the wall, that's like, hey, that's clever, and keep going, but to know it as a beginning of engaging resources. We've already talked about the spectrum of prevention, and I don't think I need to go over that again with you all, but we do think it is, again, you know, every man that we work with is not going to work at the Rape Crisis Center. Every military personnel that we work with that may not want to report to the commander or to share with anyone. But we think that we want to offer as many opportunities from the policy level down to the individual and serving victims as we possibly can, so that wherever people are in their healing or in their development or in their activism, they have a way in which they can be involved. And we think that that is just a really important way in which we can sustain people's involvement and build these communities where sexual assault is not tolerated, and that the resources are available to support those who find themselves victimized and need healing from that. So those are some of the areas that these are the key areas that our marketing campaign focuses on. And we think that those are, again, some of the benefits to having a multifaceted campaign. But as you see in changing organizational practices and influence policy and legislation, you know, social marketing materials are limited. You know, you need to take the next step. You need to see this as a much larger, can you scale this up? And what do some of the decision makers need to know? What gaps and services exist in policies and current trends that will allow us to start talking about changing organizational practices? And one of the things I didn't want to click, can I go back, Sarah, if I do this? One of the things that's great about working with the Department of Defense, the SAPRO office, is that, you know, when we start thinking as an organization in civilian life, what is it to change organizational practices? What are the policies? You know, we can really look to them as an example of the structure that is in place, the leadership that is in place, and the models that they have to help us think about in civilian life how we make the same kinds of changes, how we demonstrate the same kind of resolve. And so for us, moving towards next steps with some of our work, those organizational practices, how we institutionalize this, how we train to prepare primary prevention as an expectation of some of the cultural and core values of the Department of Defense, we think those are really great resources to do just that. So here you see two of the social marketing bystander intervention campaigns that we've used and developed with SAPRO and under their leadership, and the Our Strength is for Defending and the Hurt One Affects All. We've used these in our ROTC clubs here in D.C., our courses in our high schools. And again, you know, in terms of building community and neighbors and young people, when you see these men and women who are doing a really difficult job, committing themselves and seen as a part of their role as military personnel, all there unified together, all branches, saying that this is something we're going to prioritize, that's just really a powerful message. And it focus groups tremendously because, and Suzanne can speak to this better than I, you know, I wasn't responsible for this piece at the time, the detail that is expected to make it authentic and to really meet what is an authentic representation of military is tremendous. And I think it is the exact kind of thoroughness that really adds the credibility to it and makes young men and women that we work with, you know, look, we've had young people from the sixth grade told us, you know, I'm going to the Marines. You know, I want to go to the Navy. You know, I'm going to go to the Army. And they want it because they are so desirous of what these images reflect in their mind, those core values again. It's important to them. And so for us, this is a really great example of how we can again say, well, if you're going to be a Marine, if you're going to be in the Navy, if you're going to be Army, you've got to recognize that sexual assault, sexual harassment, those aren't accepted. Those aren't tolerated. And the skills to know and understand as a military personnel, a full-time military personnel, you need to know what are the expectations if one of your personnel, one of your colleagues, finds themselves vulnerable or is about to perpetrate. Because that's what's expected of you as a Marine. That's what's expected of you as a soldier in the Army or in the Air Force. And we love this because, again, it's the beginning of them seeing images of pro-social understandings of prevention of sexual assault. The focus on the most recent one, the Hertz One Affects All, and was created for all the branches. You know, again, I think about people from outside of the field who, you know, talk to us about working with the military. And again, I come to this work as a youth advocate. That's my primary background. And so for me to be able to say to my young people, when they are giving the, but what if about sexual assault, but what if she, or what if this, when we can talk about, or Neil, you know, you must be one of these new age sensitive guys kind of thing, right? I'm not judging those men. I'm just saying that's not who I am, right? In the midst of talking to men around these issues, and they see those emblems, and they recognize that military personnel who risk their lives for us all over this globe are committed to this, and the leadership is committed to this, I don't really have to say much beyond that. That this serious, the seriousness that these institutions, these corps, these agencies take on, and they see sexual assault as a part of their responsibility, allows us great, great credibility to continue to build. So the Spectrum Level 1 of strengthening individuals' knowledge and skills, there's 10-minute training videos that show, you know, that enlist images that are corps-specific, branch-specific, allow people to see their fellow personnel engage in these issues and learn more about it as a beginning. Promoting community education, as I said, not only did we use it on the different military bases, but we were able to use it here in D.C. in our ROTC courses. It was a great resource for our young people to start to see the benefit of this. And again, it shows the military's leadership not just with their own personnel, but within the community as a whole. We continue to get more requests for work in ROTC and to try to incorporate this as an expectation moving forward. So we really enjoy having access to those. Promoting community education. When you hear Hurts One Affects All, we don't let our guard down, or no sailor stands watch alone, that's their language. You know, I love working with the military. You all would not want me in the military, right? I wouldn't be a good soldier, I don't think. But I think learning this language and gaining this education allows us to really highlight, you know, the professional expectation of this of these personnel, the training, the alertness. You know, when you hear about military readiness as the expectation, some of our friends would say, well, that means they don't really care about sexual assault. It's like, no. We're meeting them where they are in a way in which they can meet their staff with, right? I don't expect all men to work at the Rape Crisis Center, as I said. But when they know it's an expectation and it's being spoken in their language, it's something that they gravitate towards. Even if it's only because it's an order, that's okay when we're looking to reduce sexual assault and domestic violence. Until they can gain the understanding of how it benefits them as well, because they do come back from being deployed. They are at the library, at the PTA meeting, or at the ball game, and we want them to be examples of men and women who recognize the importance of their role in preventing this. And we think, again, promoting community education allows for this. I'm not sure if this is going to, but I'll try it.
It may not work.
It may not.
We have to actually request 6 months in advance for internet in the room. So,
and I'm getting,
not gonna work.
And Sarah, I'm glad. I'm sure you told me that 6 months ago,
no,
and I'm like,
didn't.
Ah, it'll work. So, no, I can talk. This is just one of the TV and radio PSAs. Thank you for offering. I appreciate that. What's nice about this, again, you know, seeing your colleagues doing something and valuing it and performing it and hearing it. And knowing how it sounds around these issues was a really valuable piece. And so back to the TV and radio PSAs that we did for the branches, it was just a really, it brought our issue alive. It wasn't a poster, it wasn't a billboard, it wasn't just a training. It was another way to engage this issue, meeting people where they are. I'm a visual learner. You know, I don't read the directions, I kind of got to put my hands on it, and I just kind of look at it, and that's me. And I know there are a lot of people who are that way, and this is just another thing. You know, you're listening to the radio, you hear something in the background, and it becomes just another way to grab onto it. We think it's a great opportunity, okay, for personnel as well. I'm getting the high signs, let me.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's back.
Educating providers, I think this is, again, about both community and recognizing that each branch had a slightly different way in which their process unfolded, their culture existed. And so we had to learn about what that meant. You know, we don't go in and say, hey, do it our way. We come and want to really learn and to build a relationship so we can understand how we can best be a resource and a partner in this. And so having those opportunities to create the posters and the training guides for the SARCs, the sexual assault response coordinators, meant that we as Men Can Stop Rape had to get an education around this. The campaign reached an estimated 350,400 military personnel worldwide. Again, I mean, not to boast, but like, you know, in the room, we're like, look, the military is doing this. They can disseminate this better than, you know, some states are able to do it because they're the military. And that's it. That gives us great credibility in our approach, and it talks to the scale of this and how we can start to measure its impact so that you professionals can start thinking about what evaluation pieces we could include to talk about the impact. What is the evaluation piece of someone who was assaulted prior to joining the military, now recognizing that the military has a resource and a protocol for them to receive support in their healing process? And I think that's really valuable, and I think, again, speaks to the leadership of the military here. Fostering coalitions and networks, I mean, I've spoken about it here. We feel like we are a part of that network, and that's coalitions and trying to network, whether it be the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault or Sexual Assault Response Coordinators, the Department of Defense, or Men Can Stop Rape. There are a whole bunch of ways in which we can collaborate and not reinvent the wheel. I think, Jayden, is what you, or Katie, you said. There are things that were already existing. DOJ was doing some wonderful things. How do we sync those? The HURTS one affects all, creating a, these are some next steps. We want to start working with the command. We want to start figuring out a way to support the leadership around how do we train the officers. One of our trainings, we had a, she was a drill sergeant, I believe, at Camp Lejeune. Mary was a Marine. And as she said, Neil, look, this is not my full-time job. You know, this is the military. And sometimes it's not volunteer, it's voladoo. And so as she stepped into this role as the coordinator on her base, she said she herself, as a woman, was getting all an education around this issue and the real benefit to that, and said, you know, it may be hard for enlisted personnel to share this information with their command in the room, but that if the command was starting to make this a part of their expectations, their professional expectations, it may make it easier for enlisted personnel to see the responsibility they have. Some of the other things that we want to do is service-specific campaign guides for commanders that would allow them to see the benefit to, in terms of military readiness, having these kinds of issues not exist, prepare them even more to do the difficult jobs that they do around the globe for us. So I know I'm out of my time, so I just want to say thank you all for allowing me some speak. And here's a small example of what we said, what would it look like if we had a similar all-forces representation with officers speaking to the importance of this. I think these are lieutenants, is what my staff said to me. But what would it be to have higher level, higher ranking command, all them from all branches, speaking to this issue as a part of their expectation? And that's one of the things that we were fantasizing about, how we can collaborate with Suzanne's office and find ways to do. Thank you very much.